Happy St. Patrick's Day from the Michael Malloy program, don't you know? All right, we got a wee bit of a show for you tonight. Despite the Fed-assisted bailout of Bear Stearns today, Bush still sees the economy as a glass half full. Too bad his glass is half full of Jim Beam. Or maybe you could see reality. We have to bring the wee folk in on this one, won't we? And too much capital. All right, that's enough. And too much cappuccino Perino today tried to explain to curious reporters how the government has $30 billion to bail out big corporations, but, $300 pocket change in the decisive action to help the average citizen attempt to hold on to his or her home. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here. Oh, my God, is that Rachel Maddow again on MSNBC? She's all over. Hi, Rach. How you doing? Welcome to the Malloy program on this Monday evening, the 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day. I'm glad you could make it. All of my friends who used to go out on St. Patrick's Day and use this day as an excuse to drink until they puked off the nearest street corner curb are now either too old to do it anymore or in detox or have been in AA for like 20 years and don't want to screw anything up. So it's kind of weird, St. Patrick's Day. And it's a sad commentary, I know, but in this country we celebrate it by drinking rather than celebrating the bonnie St. Patrick.
Well, we are talking about a celebration of a guy that, you know, pushed a bunch of snakes into the ocean, so I don't know how else you would celebrate that. I'd drink if I saw a man driving a bunch of snakes into the ocean. I think the first thing I'd do is drink.
You're Syrian, aren't you?
Only half Syrian.
Yeah.
I'm half Irish.
Irish and Syrian. Let me tell you something, True Seekers. Try that sometime. Marry someone who's half Irish and half Syrian. The Florida Democratic Party has decided there's not going to be a revote in Florida. So what is it about Florida? I'll get to the Bear Stearns thing in a second. What is it about Florida? What is it about that godforsaken dumping ground of freaks? I'm not talking about the people who listen to WINC. No. You know who I'm talking about. Florida Democratic Party Chair Karen Thurman sent out an email today to Florida Democrats. Did you get one? That says the Democratic Party in Florida has, quote, researched every potential alternative process from caucuses to county conventions to mail-in elections, but no plan could come anywhere close to being viable in Florida, end quote. The most important part of the email is that last part. No plan could come anywhere close to being viable in Florida. If you want to know about Florida, you can read the books of, Carl Hiaasen, who also writes for the Herald, I believe, Miami Herald. Anyway, according to a news release, four Democratic Party will now wait for the Rules Committee of the Democratic National Committee to meet in a few weeks, so the bloodletting will go on. Ms. Thurman also blamed the state's initial decision to move up its primary before February 5th, Super Tuesday. Now, understand something. I'm now going to share with you the real reason for this. A lot of people are blaming Howard Dean and blaming the Democratic National Committee. There is plenty of blame to go around, I'm sure. But let us not lose sight of the most salient fact here. And that is, because, see, the people in Michigan are getting ready to do a redo. All right? But Florida, no. And I think it was deliberate. I think this was deliberate. As the chair of the Democratic Party in Florida says, the decision that led to the sanctions from the Democratic National Committee, which prevents Florida's delegates from being seated, came from the Republican legislature and governor's office in Florida. Now, Charlie Crist has been all over television today and the last few days with that smarmy, smiley face of his and his white hair and his nice suntan talking about, oh, we want everybody in Florida to vote. We really do. You know, we're a Democratic state, small d, of course. We believe in the power of the ballot box, and we'd like everybody to vote. Oh, you lying son of a bitch. Here's what happened. When the Florida legislators got together back in December, I think it was in December, to try to decide when their state would hold its Republican and Democratic primary. In other words, its primary. They decided to move up the primary to before February 5th, Super Tuesday. Now, why did they do that? They moved it to January 29th, 6 days ahead. They, excuse me. They tried to do that. The Democratic legislators in Tallahassee tried to do it, tried to set the Florida primary on February 5th instead of January 29th, which the Republicans were doing in the state of Florida. Now, the Democrats opposed a proposed amendment to what was then called House Bill 537 to keep Florida's primary on February 5th, was greeted with laughter and derision from the Republicans who control Florida state government. You want us to do what? You want us to wait until you're kidding us, right? Now, I'm just curious. You don't have to email about this. I've not heard about this until I read the email from Democratic Party Chair in Florida, Karen Thurman, that the Republicans knew full well. They knew. Of course they knew. They knew what the Democratic National Committee had said. Any state that holds the primary before Super Tuesday will have delegates that won't be counted. And the purpose for that, of course, if you want to really believe the BS, was so that the Democratic candidate would be decided in enough time, well in advance, so that they could focus their energies then on whipping the Republicans' ass. But, of course, it didn't turn out that way because of the X factor, the Barack Obama X factor. Hillary Clinton was supposed to win this. And all of a sudden, here comes Barack Obama, and the Democrats in Washington, the National Committee, go, oh, my God, what's this? Ah, eek! Well, the Republicans in Florida knew the grip that the Democratic National Committee had over the Democrats in Florida. They knew that if the Democrats in Florida went to a primary and voted before February 5th, that the votes wouldn't count. Oh, gee. Where's Catherine Harris? Quick. I wonder if she sat in on the planning session where the Republicans in the Florida legislature said to themselves, oh, damn, you talk about a gift from the Democrats. Son of a bitch, all we have to do then is move our primary back, you know, the one the state of Florida pays for, move it back to before February 5th, hold it then. The Democrats will turn out in record numbers because they want to get rid of the Republicans. Har, 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 har. And then you know what? The whole damn thing won't count. Which is exactly what they did. So it appears now that Florida would be the only state not represented at this summer's Democratic convention in Denver. Michigan is the other state facing similar sanctions because they jumped the gun too, but officials there appear close to agreeing on a revote. But Florida, run by the Republicans? We did it again! We did it again! High five! High five! You can just hear it. I can hear it in Tallahassee, all the way up here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. High five! We'll be back after the break.
I think American people, now that they've realized I'm going to seek re-election, expect me to seek re-election.
21 past the hour. The Bear Stearns problem. If you don't know, it's Bear Stearns is one of the largest global investment banks. One of the largest on the planet. It's a securities trading and brokerage firm, the largest in the one of the largest in the world. The main business of Bear Stearns includes capital markets, both equities and fixed income, and also investment banking, so-called wealth management, so-called, and clearing services for prime brokerage houses. Okay, it's been around for a long, long time. Now, they suffered a decline in value with its market capitalization dropping by about 47% over the weekend. People just ran like, I don't know, like a herd of locusts was coming. So J.P. Morgan Chase bought it for $236 million, which is about the price of the Manhattan office tower that contains Bear Stearns, which really is all J.P. Morgan wanted. That's all they care about, because in order to facilitate the sale, they came to you and me and asked for $30 billion, and of course you and I said, sure, go ahead. What? You don't remember that meeting? Well, it happened so quick. And the Fed chairman was the one who said, okay, we'll get into the bail the thieves out business, and we'll back it with U.S. taxpayer dollars. So if you weren't around, if you were out to lunch over the weekend, taking the kids to the park, and you missed it, you just signed on for $30 billion to make sure that Bear Stearns, which has been around for, what, a century and a half, didn't go belly up. Huh? How does that feel? Now, if you're behind on your mortgage payments, screw you. You're going to lose your house, but you did assist in the bailout of Bear Stearns. Oh, my God. It's just sickening. Sickening. The best quote about Bear Stearns ever, here it is. The whole Bear Stearns bailout is hilarious when you consider how horrified the so-called free market proponents are at the thought of, say, socialized medicine. But they barely bat an eye at socialized banking. Yeah, the sons of bitches. You know, it's days like today that I get so furious I can't even talk. I just have to sit around and drink coffee all day. Yeah, from Super Beans. Prairie 2 wrote in, Mike, what did the Bear Stearns come out of the woods and do on our doorstep? A hint. Chucklenuts lit the bag on fire, rang the doorbell, and ran away. Boy, does that bring back memories, Prairie 2. These bailouts of giant corporations, Prairie 2 writes, are so big as to make the numbers meaningless. They have tied up the entire assets of every man, woman, and child, and children yet to be born for generations in this mess. The Fed is just printing money to do these bailouts. They don't even borrow from China anymore. China isn't stupid. They're spending every dollar they can while they can. This is why the price of commodities is going through the roof. Shipping containers going back to China have gone from 30% filled to 80% filled, but not with manufactured goods. One-third are filled with recycled paper, the rest with ag products and scrap metal. Copper pipe, wire, and aluminum siding stripped from abandoned houses fill many of them. Despite the increase in exports and the inflation in prices, we still run a $60 billion a month trade deficit. Why? Because this is what the Bush crime family wants. They are stealing America, house by house, business by business, truck by truck. did your retirement plan buy Bear Stearns last year for $140 a share? Today, it went for $2 a share. Plan on panning or pawning your gold watch. Yeah, it's astonishing. It's astonishing. And the Republicans, the elite, the I want to say managerial class, but that's wrong. The upper level of capitalism in this country, the capitalists continue to just rip our guts out. I mean, take a look at economic history in this country. How many times has this happened? How many times, truth seekers, have happened in your lifetime? Huh? The sons of bitches just keep doing it. And we continue to allow it to happen over and over and over again. The savings and loan thing, that was Pappy Bush's debacle. And this is Junior's, not only Enron, but now this. And don't forget who really, really, really got hurt when Enron, when their Ponzi scheme was revealed. All the employees who had Enron stock as part of their retirement portfolio, people who invested in Enron, hoping, you know, older folks who got burned in the savings and loan scandal, older people for the most part. This continues to happen. It continues to happen. And we just keep letting it happen. Instead of running these son of a bitches out of town, instead of showing up on Wall Street, to hell with the White House, show up on Wall Street locked and loaded. They're the ones that keep doing this to us over and over and over again, and they laugh their asses off once again. Now, the mortgage meltdown, this $30 billion that the Fed printed up today on cheap paper is nothing. It's nothing. It's a drop in a teacup. The mortgage meltdown. Your children and my children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren for generations are going to be paying for this, because we're talking about the tens of trillions of dollars. Do you know the difference between $30 billion and $1 trillion? During the break, figure it out. You can hear the angels sing.
A plan that takes the issue about solvency farther down the road than any other president.
Oh, Jesus. 25 before the hour. So the Federal Reserve, and this is probably one place where I agree with Ron Paul, it should be burned to the ground. But the Federal Reserve walked into this political firestorm. This in an election year. If the Democrats don't take advantage of this, to hell with the Democrats. Anyway, the Federal Reserve pledged $30 billion in taxpayer money, yours and mine, to guarantee this filthy, predatory, sick, capitalistic monster called Bear Stearns assets, while homeowners in this country are struggling. They're at the core of the financial crisis. So while you've got homeowners struggling, trying not to default, and this right-wing garbage that came out when the enormity of this problem first started to surface, well, they bought houses they shouldn't have had. Oh, stop it. Stop it! Take a look at how these people got where they are. Now, some people are saying, well, you know, the Federal Reserve could hardly sit by while the fifth largest U.S. investment bank collapsed. And this is supposed to be the biggest single Federal Reserve bailout on record. Can't just sit back. Why not? Why can't they? Isn't the magic of the free market supposed to work in situations like this? Huh? These predatory sons of bitches who continue to do this to us? And our children and our grandchildren? I wouldn't know Bear Stearns from a Humvee. But the son of a bitches have now had an effect on my life and my kids' lives and my grandkids' lives and yours. Somebody else's game is being played on you and me. Over and over again, everything they can find to screw up with their capitalistic games, they screw up. It doesn't make any difference what it is. The savings industry, the banking industry, the mortgage industry, war, profiteering, it doesn't matter. How much longer? Huh? How much longer do you think the American public is going to be willing to keep getting hosed by these predatory bastards? How much longer? Huh? Just over and over and over again. And it's not millions or hundreds of millions. It's now billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars. Our entire future is being mortgaged, stolen, eaten by these predatory bastards. And what do we do? Nothing. Not a damn thing. Nothing. Kurt Eggers, a professor at Chapman University's Law School in Orange, California, says, quote, as the Fed rides to the aid of Bear Stearns, there's a growing disconnect between the Bush administration's willingness to help Wall Street and its willingness to aid the homeowners facing foreclosure. End quote. A growing disconnect? Professor Eggert says, quote, when it comes to reducing foreclosures, the Bush administration has adopted a, what, me-worry attitude, hoping that the market will fix the problem with some cheerleading by federal regulators. End quote. The voter, the consumer, as Bush likes to refer to us as, the average American, those of us who actually, by Christ, work for a living, we don't make our money on things like hedge funds and all this crap, untaxed profits and capital gains and offshore garbage. We work! And then we watch as it's stolen from us over and over and over again. How much more? How much more are you willing to contribute, Truth Seeker? Huh? To these rich son of a bitches, the mega wealthy. I'm not talking about the people that make $1 million a year. That's not rich anymore. How much longer? How much longer are we going to continue to stand there and be raped financially, emotionally, physically by these son of a bitches? How much longer? That's a question I can't find an answer. Any other country, we'd already be armed and in the streets. What is it about us? So, $2 a share. The Fed said, "Yeah, go ahead. We'll make sure you're." They said to J.P. Morgan Chase, "Go ahead. $2 a share is selling for what was 140 a year ago. Go ahead. $2 a share." But should Bear Stearns' assets lose value, you and I are on the hook. $30 billion in funding. I love it when the newscasters, like the ones on this network, say, well, the government backs. The government, my ass! It's you and me! What does Bush like to say every time he chisels a $300 or $600, $600 little crappy tax rebate? It's your money. This is my money, too, you filthy thief. This is my money, too. Bear Stearns, screw Bear Stearns. Screw J.P. Morgan. Screw Enron. They don't care. Just like collateral damage in Iraq. It's collateral damage here. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Consumer, Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner, you got in the way? Well, you know, we big boys, we have to thud all over the place, and we take a dump. It's going to get on you. I'm sorry, but when you live around giants, that's what happens. Gee, did I get some of that on you and your house and your kid and your savings and your retirement? I did. Tough. Predatory bastards. Ron Paul, who's been a longtime vocal critic of the Fed, said the latest steps here smacked of panic and would pile more pressure on the U.S. dollar that's already just tanking, inflicting added pain on taxpayers already struggling to cope with rising inflation. Ron Paul said, quote, "To me, it's an immoral act. An immoral act. It's deceitful, and it's stealing from the people who saved money. It should be unconstitutional because technically they, the Fed, have never been given direct authority to create money out of thin air," end quote. And talk about hypocrisy. Talk about hypocrisy. Bush, who appointed this slug, Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed, Bush rejected plans to rescue debt-laden homeowners, yet he supports the Fed's rescue of Bear Stearns. It's astonishing, and it happens every single day. Every single day you find out something else, huh? Every day. Brandon in Brooklyn wrote, what the F? $30 billion to bail out Bear Stearns? And that may be just the beginning? The numbers could go up to $200 billion? He writes, "I have a real problem with these so-called free marketeers who constantly rail, no government regulation, free market, let the markets take care of themselves." These corporations have no problem with government staying out of their business, like no oversight, no regulation. But they're so quick to run to Big Daddy with their hats in their hands when they go belly up. Bush moved with lightning speed to make sure Bear Stearns got their $30 billion, but moved like a snail when providing relief to the victims of Hurricane Katrina. Can you imagine what $30 billion given directly into the hands of the victims of Katrina could have done? Instead, we have to save one private financial company that engaged in questionable business practices and will most likely lay off thousands of low-level employees after they downsize. It's unbelievable. And it won't stop. And it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop. You think it's going to stop with Bush gone? Oh, get real. You think it's going to stop with the next president, whether it's Obama or Clinton or McCain? Do you really? You're not that stupid. Are you, truth seeker? You can't be that stupid. Okay, not stupid. Ignorant. You can't be. Do you know what it's going to take to stop this? It's going to take an administration with the guts and the courage to just rip these son of a bitches apart and install rules and regulations that allow something resembling a fair market to work, but with all sorts of restraints to prevent this from happening. And that's not going to be a President Clinton or a President Obama, unless they've got this as their ace in the hole, the money card they're going to pull out once they're elected. Do you think that's possible? Do you think we've got another Roosevelt here that will try to save capitalism by heavily restricting it? I don't. Now, Bush had something to say about this, and so did too much Cappuccino Perino. And we'll have that for you when we come back. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
My disbelief, I know that it was just a dream. All the covers that I see are different from the books I read. Everything is crumbling around me. Why does everything cost so much money? Somebody please help out my family. My mom needs hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs. My dad needs a break, he works all day every day. My brother needs a place and a job where he can make enough money to take care of his baby. Here's a simple
money.
about anything here in Washington, D.C.
It's a rich man's world. It's a rich man's world.
Of course you don't. So, in celebration of the Fed today issuing a $30 billion line of credit to help J.P. Morgan Chase buy Bear Stearns at a huge, huge blue light special. In light of all that, in celebration of all that, can you imagine what these pigs are doing out of sight of common folk like you and me or your average retiree that thought he or she had maybe 250 or 300 or maybe even 400 in a portfolio someplace? Imagine the laughter. And still, the freak in the White House is optimistic about the economy. Listen to the lying leprechaun, what he had to say this morning at the photo op after meeting with his so-called economic advisors, all of whom should be arrested, tried, convicted, and sentenced, and put in prison for the rest of their useless goddamn lives. Here's what the Bush baby had to say.
One thing is for certain, we're in challenging times. But another thing is for certain, that we've taken strong and decisive action. The Federal Reserve has moved quickly to bring order to the financial markets. Our financial institutions are strong. Our capital markets are functioning efficiently and effectively.
What?
We obviously will continue to monitor the situation, and when need be, we'll act decisively in a way that continues to bring order to the financial markets. In the long run, our economy is going to be fine.
Can you believe that? Now, let's reassure the, what is it, several million or is it higher? I don't even know anymore. Homeowners, home buyers, very few of us actually own our homes. We make payments. Are we to ignore the fact that so many Americans now owe more than the house is worth? Is the economy in good shape, you dumb bastard, when people are staring at these gas pumps and they're watching the numbers go up to $4 a gallon? Which is, on the one hand, is fine because it may finally teach Americans to do something other than buy gas guzzlers. On the other hand, it continues to enrich the predatory bastards who take us to war, have been taking us to war for 125 years, and it just doesn't stop. My God. Yeah, Raisin Brain says we're okay. Just do what J.P. Morgan Chase did today. Go shopping in a discount store.
What's amazing to me about every Bush economic speech, the ones that he doesn't bungle so completely that you have no idea what he's saying, but he says the same thing over and over again without saying anything. He says, we're taking strong and decisive action to bring order, and if we need to, we'll take strong and decisive action to bring order again. There's nothing there that's being said.
You honestly don't believe anything he says, do you, Kathy? Not even for half a heartbeat, do you?
No, but what kind of platitudes does he think we're going to keep accepting?
No, I don't think he is aware of what people accept or don't accept. He said it before, he lives in a bubble. He's a psychopathic little rat bastard who is sicker than his father was. All this stuff that's happening out here in the real world has zero effect on George W. Bush. No effect whatsoever. It doesn't exist. It's in a parallel universe to his. His is a universe where corporate America continues to tickle his gonads and stroke him and tell him he's a good little boy. And just do what Dick Cheney tells you to do and you'll be okay. Now lay down, be quiet, here. Here's something shiny, go play with it. Now with the recession all over the place, and we're starting to bump up against a recession, reporters had a whole bunch of questions for Double Speak Dana today, Dana Cappuccino. Let's see if we can run this real quick. We've got time. Reporter says, Dana, for people who are losing their homes or losing their jobs, and they see the government engineering this $30 billion line of credit for Bear Stearns. How do you reconcile the two?
This isn't about bailing anyone out. These actions are intended, as I said earlier today, to minimize financial market disruptions. And investors in Bear Stearns are taking large and significant losses in this transaction. But I would also say that a major market disruption would have very damaging consequences and be very painful for everybody, from the small business owner to the homeowner, for everybody all the way up and down the economic food chain.
But people who are facing, say, foreclosures, individual, the little guys who are facing their foreclosure, are looking at the big guys getting government, if not brokered, certainly over, they're overseeing and deals that are engineered to sort of keep the big picture financial community afloat. And they're saying, well, where's my boost of liquidity?
They're going to get that boost of liquidity in the form of a stimulus package and a tax rebate that's coming to them the second week of May.
$300 to $600. Son of a bitch. She actually said that. The homeowners who are desperately clutching the sides of this tunnel that they're being whirlpooled down, desperately looking for a toehold, a fingerhold, while these filthy, predatory capitalist pigs in New York can just snap their fingers. And the Fed says, okay, here's $30 billion and another $200 billion in the offing. Where are you going to get the money? Oh, the American taxpayer will pay for it. But everybody else, what do we get? What does Dana say? They're going to get that boost of liquidity with a $600 tax rebate check. And that's supposed to save a person's home? You see why I hate these people? Do you understand? I'm sure you hate them too. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. I get way too worked up about this stuff. It's like an avalanche, you know? It just keeps coming, and the boulders keep getting bigger. Sarah in Brevard, North Carolina writes, one reason the Fed may have done this, in the subject line, she writes, Mike, I read somewhere, sorry, no link, I've been reading so much about this today, I forget where I read it, but she says, I read somewhere that one reason the Fed bailed out Bear Stearns is that if it had gone bankrupt, its books would have been laid out publicly and investors would see that the company's assets were garbage. Then they would realize that all the other investment banks' assets are garbage. Then, ... right. That is so true. These new instruments, every time I read Krugman's column in the New York Times, where he's, over the past 2 years, he's been warning about this, and he mentions these new investment instruments that I've never heard of in my life. And Krugman will say, for example, this is just, I'm pulling this out of the thin air, but he'll say, and let's not even start talking about the DBDs. And then in parentheses, he'll write, don't ask. Instruments that were designed to spread the potential losses across hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of high-powered global investors. But these high-powered global investors know that they can always come back after they've taken their profits, after they've made their fortunes, and stick it right up the hiney of the American taxpayer, and that we will cover the losses. Not them, we. And this is how it works now. This is how capitalism works now. Margaret writes that Bear Stearns and J.P. Morgan announced the layoff of up to 7,000 Bear Stearns employees. It was on the ticker tape info at Bloomberg News today. Well, sure, you know, the workers, the little worker bees, they are totally immaterial. Collateral damage. Oh, sorry, wiped out your family? Oh, gee, that's too bad. You're on the street. You're moving in. Oh, sorry. You just got in the way. Oh, stop crying. Back to too much cappuccino perino at the White House press briefing today. Reporters want to know if Bush's confidence and optimism in the rosy state of the economy is warranted. You know, like the rosy state of the war in Iraq, or the rosy state of democracy in Afghanistan, or, well, you get the point. Or are there more economic disasters ahead for the little guys? You know, little guys, the American, as Bush puts it, consumer, who aren't big corporations and therefore won't get $30 billion in assistance. So the question comes to Dana. Can you tell me whether the president feels we've seen the worst of it, whether there are likely to be any more effective failures of major financial institutions?
I don't know. You know, obviously, in a market economy, economy cycle, and they go up and down, and the question is whether or not they're mild disruptions or sharp disruptions. And what the president can do is make sure that his leadership is in place to take decisive action when they need to, and they will stand ready to do more if they think they need to. But then I think the other most important thing to do in terms of timing was the stimulus package. And the president said that would be a piece of insurance that we would need in case the markets took a turn for the worse. They did take a turn for the worse, and the good news is that we already have that in place, and so that should have the impact that we asked for.
I can't wait to see how the $300 rebate is going to impact in May. Is that, or 600, whatever the hell it is, it doesn't matter. It's funny money. It means nothing. It's a couple of tanks of gas and a week's groceries now. Is that going to save somebody's home? Is it going to rebuild their now destroyed retirement funds? Is it going to what? Tide them over while they find a new job? It's never ending. It's never ending. It's just never ending with this, not just this gang, but with the kind of predatory capitalism that this gang has institutionalized now. The regulatory agencies, SEC, all of these agencies that are specifically designed to, if not annihilate, at least slow down the absolute essence of capitalism, which is to eat your ass alive. It's to destroy you, destroy your family, destroy everything that you ever worked for, and to continue to dangle the possibility in front of your stupid eyes that you think someday you're going to be a millionaire. I've got news for you, booby. You're not. You really aren't. Free market? Fair market? You sell, I buy, you make a profit? Not a thing wrong with it. But that's not what we have. That's not what we've had for how many decades now? And now this gang of vermin comes into the executive branch of government and has absolutely crippled. We have been kneecapped. You think it's so? You think Bear Stearns is the end of it? Oh, please. Oh, come on. Come on. Don't be dumb. We can all be ignorant, but let's not be stupid. We are in a holding pattern right now. And you know what? Bush still believes that the solution to all this, you know what the solution is? To make permanent his tax cuts for the mega wealthy in this country. Can you believe this? You better believe it, because this is the economic situation that we now have staring us in the face. It's astonishing. And the hits are not going to stop coming. They're going to continue. And this psychopathic John McCain is talking about a 100-year residency in Iraq. What's supposed to happen, John? Billions and hundreds of trillions of dollars more sucked into that black hole? Which one of your corporate sponsors are on the payroll? Which one isn't? Huh, McCain? I don't know. I've got to address just for a minute, if you don't want to hear this about the Barack Obama race craziness that's going on, then just tune out for the next 15 minutes. I've got emails from people that said, I'm so sick of it. Well, this is what's happening. This is what is going to destroy the Democratic Party. I'm almost to the point now where I keep thinking, yeah, you know, the Democrats are going to commit suicide. The Democratic Party leadership, John McCain, is going to slide into the Oval Office, and then it's really, really, truly over. For you psychopaths that liked Bush, you're going to love McCain. And no, he's not, you know, I don't care what the pig man or all his little piglets say, he's not a liberal in conservative clothing. He's a conservative who's insane. But as far as the Obama, Barack Obama's minister, who is being accused now of treason, that he committed treason when he uttered what he said, there's a guy named, what's his name, Frank Schaefer. He's the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. Have you heard of Frank Schaefer? He wrote something at Huffington Post today. Obama's minister committed treason, but when my father said the same thing, he was a Republican hero. See, they're doing it to Barack Obama. They're doing it to him. The white power structure in this country is doing it to him. And the white power structure is coming out of all the rat holes in the furniture and in the woodwork, and they're doing it to him. And each little tiny bit of the power structure adds their little bit of innuendo and accusation and guilt by association until we Caucasians can get to the point to where we can say, yep, I knew it. You know, a Negro is a Negro, and I don't care how Barack Obama appears or how cool he is. Yep, I knew it. That's what they're doing to this man. That's what the white power structure is doing. They're nibbling him to death with their little razor-sharp teeth. Let me share this Frank Schaefer thing with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. In a world full of greed, what we need is to stand together in unity. In a world full of hate, in a world full of greed, just believe that peace will come eventually. In a world full of hate, in a world full of greed, never let go of hope. You can still achieve your dreams.
Gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Frank Schaefer is a writer and author of Crazy for God. At Huffington Post today, he writes about how when Senator Obama's preacher thundered about racism and injustice, Obama suffered smear by association. But as Schaefer writes, when my late father, religious right leader Francis Schaefer, denounced America and even called for the violent overthrow of the U.S. government, he was invited to lunch with Presidents Ford, Reagan, and Bush Sr. Every Sunday, Schaefer writes, thousands of right-wing white preachers rail against America's sins from tens of thousands of pulpits. They tell us that America is complicit in the murder of the unborn, has become Sodom by coddling gays. Our public schools are sinful places full of evolutionists and sex educators hell-bent on corrupting our children. They say, as my dad often did, that we are under the judgment of God. They call America evil and warn of imminent destruction. By comparison, Barack Obama's minister shouted controversial comments. His comments were mild. All he said was that God should damn America for our racism and violence, and that no one had ever used the N-word about Hillary Clinton. Schaefer writes, Dad and I are amongst the founders of the religious right in the 70s and 80s. While Dad and I crisscrossed America denouncing our nation's sins, instead of getting in trouble, we became darlings of the Republican Party. We were rewarded for our stand by people such as Congressman Jack Kemp and the Fords and Reagan and the Bush family. The top Republican leadership depended on preachers and agitators like us to energize the rank and file. No one called us un-American. Consider a few passages from my father's immensely influential America-bashing book titled A Christian Manifesto. It sailed under the radar of the major media who back when it was published in 1980, were not paying particular attention to best-selling religious books. Nevertheless, it sold more than a million copies. Here's Dad writing in his chapter on civil disobedience, quote, If there is a legitimate reason for the use of force against the U.S. government, then at a certain point, force is justifiable, end quote. And then there's this. In the United States, the materialistic, humanistic worldview is being taught exclusively in most state schools. There's an obvious parallel between this and the situation in the USSR, and we really must not be blind to the fact that indeed in the public schools in the United States, all religious influence is as forcibly forbidden as in the Soviet Union. And then there's this. Quote, There does come a time when force, even physical force, is appropriate. A true Christian in Hitler's Germany and in the occupied country should have defied the false and counterfeit state. This brings us to a current issue that is crucial for the future of the church in the United States, the issue of abortion. It is time we consciously realize that when any office commands what is contrary to God's law, it abrogates its authority. And our loyalty to the God who gave this law then requires that we make appropriate response to that situation. End quote. And Frank writes, Was any conservative political leader associated with Dad running for cover? Far from it. Dad was a frequent guest of the Kemps, had lunch with the Fords, stayed in the White House. Reagan helped Dr. Everett Koop become Surgeon General. Dad became a hero to the evangelical community and a leading political instigator. When my dad died in 1984, everyone from Reagan to Kemp to Billy Graham lamented his passing publicly as the loss of a great American. Not one Republican leader was ever asked to denounce my dad or distance himself from Dad's statements. But take Dad's words and put them in the mouth of Obama's preacher, or in the mouth of any black American preacher, and people would be accusing that preacher of treason. Yet when we of the white religious right denounced America, white conservative Americans and top political leaders called our words godly and prophetic. And it goes on. Barack Obama is being ripped apart in a way that is of deep and abiding American tradition for a black leader. Or any black man that would aspire to something other than a career in sports or music. God forbid that he should get the idea in his head that he could be president. So what is going on now is an open attack on Barack Obama. They dare not use the N-word. So they do this. You know, Barack Obama is a traitor because of something his now retired preacher said, and not a thing that that preacher said was untrue. And I am so sick of hearing white commentators talk about how, look, it's time to get over it. We got to move on. I can certainly understand what black people have been through, let me say, to whatever progressive or liberal who makes that kind of statement, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You ought to sit down and shut up and quit showing your ignorance, because you don't have a clue, and neither do I, what black folk have been through. But when someone says, you know, it's time to get over it, move on, that was then, this is now, it smacks of a total non-understanding, not empathy, just total non-understanding of a political reality that still is in effect in this country.
'Cause I want it right with God. Yes, you know you got to get right with God.
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
26 before the hour. I remember what Uncle Clarence Thomas said before he was, you know, the one that was selected by George Herbert Walker Bush as the best candidate in America to be the Supreme Court Justice to succeed Thurgood Marshall. And during the hearings, when it came out that Uncle Clarence had as much of a sex problem as Uncle Spitzer did, or as any of these people. And Uncle Clarence sat there and said he was the victim of a high-tech lynching. Nice choice of words. It certainly worked on people like Orrin Hatch. It made a lot of white people, older white people, flinch, and guaranteed Uncle Clarence's confirmation. If you want to see a high-tech lynching, take a look at what's happening to Barack Obama. This is a high-tech lynching. What Uncle Clarence went through was a bunch of questions about his predilection for porn movies and snotty leading remarks to Anita Hill. Roz writes, Mike, you know, this thing with Obama's minister would not even be an issue if the media didn't keep harping on it. They're a bunch of stirrers, Lou Dobbs, Wolf Blitzer, and the rest of them. They have plenty of important issues in front of them, which they totally ignore, and instead pick and pick endlessly on the same carcass. The media caused the problems and direct the news. As far as I'm concerned, that minister was bang on. He said absolutely nothing that was untrue. Trouble is, the right wing can dish it out, but they can't take it. Which wise person said that one has to have a moral failing to be a Republican? Maybe it was you I heard saying it, Roz. Actually, I was paraphrasing something that Janine Garofalo said. Liberals create a moral universe and the conservatives dismantle it. I'd like to take credit for that, but that was Janine. Michael writes, today the New York Stock Exchange traded almost 6 billion shares. This is unheard of. This is an unprecedented amount of trading. And at the end of the day, the Dow was up a mere 25 points. This is massive churning. Billions of shares trading hands with no upside action. Nothing, repeat, nothing good ever comes from churning. Yeah, I think tomorrow or sometime this week, let's mark this down, Kathy, because I think we're going to see something horrendous happen in New York Stock Exchange. You know, one should not make predictions about this sort of stuff, but I have a feeling, don't you, that there is a thunderbolt coming. And then Terry sent this to me, the timeline for the Florida primary. And looking at this timeline, I think I absolutely got it wrong about the Florida Democrats. This was in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And going back to December of 2006, or no, March of 2006, the incoming Florida House Speaker Marco Rubio announces he wants to push the state's primary up to January or early February. 6 months later, the National Democratic Party moves the Nevada caucuses in the South Carolina primary into January with Iowa and New Hampshire. The party plans to award bonus delegates to states that schedule primaries and caucuses after March 15, 2008. On December 10, 2006, the Democratic National Committee Chair Howard Dean says Florida will lose delegates to the party's national convention if the state moves its presidential primary to January. And then on February 7th, 2007, February a year ago, the Florida House votes 115-1 to move the state's primary from March to January 29. In May of 2007, Charlie Crist, the governor, signs the bill moving Florida's presidential primary. September, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama pledged not to campaign. In September last year, the Florida Democratic Party affirms the January 29th presidential primary, even if it means losing all 185 elected delegates. The point being here, maybe it wasn't the Republicans who committed murder to the Democratic Party in Florida. Maybe it was the Democratic Party that committed suicide. Because what shows up here is on February 7th, 2007, the Florida House voted 115-1. That includes some Democrats to move the state's primary from March to January 29th. I don't know. Maybe somebody can do some further research. I know I'm not going to, but I shot my mouth off in the first hour of the program and said it was a dirty, rotten, filthy plot by Republicans. And most things are, because Republicans are dirty, rotten, and filthy. But maybe this was a dirty, rotten, filthy Republican plot that was enabled once again by the asinine, half-witted, brain-dead Democrats in Florida. But the Florida House voted 115-1 to move the state's primary, Republican and Democrat, to a point where the Democratic Party, National Democratic Party, would not accept the delegates from the Democrats. So go figure. I don't know the intricacies or the behind-the-scenes movement, but I just want to clarify that. If it turns out that the Democrats were complicit in Florida in committing suicide, then this is one instance where it's really not correct for me to say it was engineered all by Republicans. We believe in correcting the record quickly. And thanks to Terry for sending that in. What else do we have here? Oh, the Winter Soldier 2008 event has ended, and there are two places you can go to download the videos, and you really, 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 really should. You can go to warcomeshome.org or IVAW.org. warcomeshome.org or IVAW.org. It's incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. If you get a chance, I just strongly recommend that you listen to it. Vicky writes, if Americans listened to what these soldiers are saying or said over the week, the war would be over tomorrow. We'll get into this a little bit later in the week. But there's two places you can go to see the streaming audio now. And that is IVAW.org or warcomeshome.org. That's your assignment for this week. Let's do some phone calls here. Starting with Lee, who is calling from Las Cruces, New Mexico. Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Sure.
Looking forward to speaking to you for some time now. I just came across something, you know, you're talking about this blatant manipulation of the market to the benefit of the people who probably least need it.
Yeah.
And there's a gentleman named James Kunstler who's, I think, an architect by trade, but he writes, he has a blog and a rant on peak oil, and he often comments on things that are going on around it. Mm-hmm. He got an email from a person who works with the Department of Agriculture, and on the subject of the Republican penchant for destroying or making itself a self-realizing dream that government is not a good thing,
mm-hmm.
he writes this little blog, this kind of a strange tidings from the government, the writer from the United States Department of Agriculture. He writes, I'm writing you this email to tell you something which I find pretty disturbing. The USDA is the second largest federal office building in the D.C. area. It is massive, with hallways that stretch for three city blocks and seven floors high and so on.
Mm-hmm.
One overhead light in the halls has had their bulbs removed, sometimes two lights in a row. This is all taking place over the last few months. It's bright enough to walk down, but no doubt, but still very dark. Moreover, each floor has two banks of elevators at each end, with three elevators per bank. For the last few months, one elevator at each end has been shut down, and over the course of the last 3 weeks, there's been two more shut down. For employees have been forbidden from putting space heaters in their offices, which many have done because the heating in the building has been turned down to a level where even I, a descendant of hardy Russian peasants, feel cold. What does this tell me? It tells me that the government of the United States of America is having difficulty paying its utility bills. You think about that. Federal offices cannot keep all the lights on to keep the heat sufficiently high. We see that. We'll see what happens when the air conditioning isn't working in a few months when D.C. turns into a humid swamp.
Mm-hmm.
This is what one expects of third world governments, not the USA. And he ends it there at the end of the little email. But just, I work in the medical business, and well, that's what it is nowadays. It's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And we see daily our care being funneled more directly to those who have and not to those who don't. I don't believe the Republicans, or for that matter, some of our Democrats, are really interested in helping you and I and the people who make this whole thing work.
We're forgotten. I agree with you, Lee. Another reason they could be screwing up in the building that houses the Department of Agriculture is to make people so frustrated they just say to hell with it and quit. Thanks, Lee. I appreciate you checking in. We'll talk again, pal. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Molloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour, Reg writes regarding Obama. If I were writing the script for this nightmare, I'd have Barack Obama stand up tall and defend the content and the tone of the preacher's words. If only someone would show enough backbone to tell it like it is, and was, and will be for a long time, unless there's a total change in this country, it would be business as usual. I fear that in his speech tomorrow, Obama will distance himself from the words that rang with the truth that no one in public life dares to utter. But he'll fall into the politically correct role he has to assume to get the white vote. Wishing is such a waste of time. Reg. Yeah. After the break at the top of the hour, we're going to very quickly revisit the Elliot Spitzer case, not from the salacious side of it, but from a different side of it that I just want to share with you. Let's go back to your phone calls here. Charles is calling from Cambridge, Mass. Hey, Charles.
Good evening, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Not too bad. You know what absolutely amazes me?
Now, wait. Let me explain to people. You are the financial advisor, right?
Not a financial advisor? Not really.
What do you do, or am I confusing you with a different Charles?
Oh, that might be someone else.
Okay, never mind.
But I was going to comment, though, on the so-called financial wisdom.
Okay, do it.
The Republicans. Well, they've dropped countless amount of money on this bailout, and the money going towards the campaign of killing in Iraq is seemingly endless.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they still claim to be the party of fiscal responsibility. where do they get this?
Well, here's what I think. I don't think it's where do they get it, because they're lying bastards. The question to me is, why does a certain segment of the U.S. population still believe them or ever believe them?
It's absolutely shocking.
It is.
And the money that's being wasted right now in Wall Street and in this war with no objective in Iraq could be invested in American citizens, people who need health coverage to repair New Orleans. My God, much of New Orleans is still a ruin.
Oh, there's so many projects that could be addressed with these mountains of money that are just disappearing down a rat hole in Iraq. It doesn't cost $12 billion a month or whatever the hell the cost is to do the kind of war that we're doing in Iraq. There is no reconstruction going on. There is no oil to speak of that is being sucked out of the ground. The money is being stolen. It's being stolen. And not a few of the thieves are American. They're from all over the world.
Yeah.
But the Americans are in there just stealing like flies around a dung heap. It's just awful.
I mean, there's absolutely no fiscal responsibility over there. No accountability whatsoever. And I think the right wing doesn't even care that all the reasons for being there in the first place have been discredited. I think they just want the killing to continue simply for the sake of killing. As long as the people being killed have brown skin and are Muslim, then the right wing is happy.
Well, it's a great cover too. When you're committing grand theft on mm-hmm. the scale that these bastards are, like Cheney's company is doing, and like these private murder contractors are doing, you want cover. You want cover noise and cover images. And the suicide bombers and the fighting and the destruction, it provides perfect cover for that. So yeah, you're right. They don't want it to ever stop. Why should they? This is an enormous piggy bank that they've smashed open, and they can continue to stuff their pockets with it.
And of course people there are going to defend their homeland from an invading army, but anyone who tries to defend their family is called a terrorist. So there is no way that this war will ever end, because there is no objective. And it is so frustrating that these supporters of the war don't see this.
I know. And if I could suggest one thing, Charles, if you have a chance, if you have a chance during the next few days, take a look at some of this testimony that came from the Winter Soldier thing. There's two websites, IVAW.org and also WarComesHome.org. I watched some of the testimony live, and I've seen some of it now on the internet streaming, and it will blow your mind. You will not be able to sit there and watch this.
Wow.
And it's just soldiers, American soldiers, active duty, and who are now out of the service, just talking about what they experienced in Iraq and Afghanistan. You're not going to believe it. You
wow.
just won't believe it. Charles, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in.
Thanks,
okay,
bud.
All right, take care. Sam is calling from Los Angeles, listening on the internet. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Listen, I want to make a small comment about what you said earlier about the entire Obama thing going on right now.
Yeah.
Look, it's as simple as this. I completely agree with you. Some of these liberal talk show hosts, I'm going to drop some names here, particularly the Randy Rhodes. I mean, these people must be out of their minds. Right now is not the time to say, well, Jeremiah Wright shouldn't have said this, or this shouldn't have been said in church, or this or that. You know what the problem between us, for us is, compared to the Republicans? The Republicans know how to play defense. We don't. These people have got to learn. Right now is the time to go to general quarters, man. It's time to bring out the knives and go to work. What's all this stuff about criticizing our own at a time like this? I'm going to tell you exactly what's going to happen over this entire Obama thing, and I'm going to disagree with you on one point over here, Mike.
Okay.
This thing is not going to be as big as you think it's going to be, for one important reason. It comes down to this. Right now, Hillary Clinton is too far behind to catch up. And when it comes to it, when it comes to the convention, it's going to be 3-4 months removed from this entire situation. So when we're talking about this entire thing, the right wing or the white power structure try to destroy Barack Obama, if they were truly, if this is what they're going at right now, which is too far away from the general election to have that kind of effect on them, and Hillary Clinton's too far behind, then these have got to be the stupidest people I've ever met in my life. This thing is not going to hurt them as much as people think. But at the same time, the liberal media, Air America, Nova M, yourself, Oberman, people on TV all over the place. It's time to go to general quarters, man. It's time to fall in line and start going at these bastards.
I hear you loud and clear, Sam. I really do. Of course, the only person I have any influence on at all is my own damn self. But thanks, Sam. You're absolute. I hope you're right. I hope that it won't cause any damage. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Gosh, you guys are quick. Terry and Dawn and our resident philosopher, Bob, everybody got this in very quickly about the Florida General Assembly, the Florida legislature that is dominated by Republicans, but the vote was 115-1 to move up the primary date. Well, apparently... included in that bill was, let me just quote it here. The Republican-controlled Florida legislature passed House Bill 537 in response to public support for Florida to return to a paper trail for elections. However, during the legislative process, a number of amendments were added, one of which moved the date of their state's primary to January 29th. So in order to get a paper trail, the Democrats had to vote for the primary date move. Otherwise, they'd be stuck with Diebold. Oh, I see. And that's from Bob. Dawn writes, the rest of the story on the Florida Democrats is the Republicans dangled a paper trail for their electronic voting machines in the same bill that moved their primary. No Democrat was going to say no to that. I don't blame them. Rock, meet hard place. Dawn, yeah. And then Terry, Mike, you can still blame on the Republicans because that legislation, including having a paper trail for voting. Okay. I'll correct the correction. It was more Republican ugliness. Let me share something with you here. This is written by Elliot Spitzer, February 14th this year. When did he get busted? Less than 2 weeks. Here's what he wrote. This was in the Washington Post. Huh? You ready? Entitled, How the Bush Administration Stopped the States from Stepping in to Help Consumers. About predatory lending? Here's what Elliot Spitzer wrote Thursday, February 14th. Several years ago, state attorneys general and others involved in consumer protection began to notice a marked increase in a range of predatory lending practices by mortgage lenders. Some were misrepresenting the terms of loans, making loans without regard to consumers' ability to repay, making loans with deceptive teaser rates that later ballooned astronomically, packing loans with undisclosed charges and fees, or even paying illegal kickbacks. These and other practices, we noticed, were having a devastating effect on homebuyers. In addition, the widespread nature of these practices, if left unchecked, threatened our financial markets. Even though predatory lending was becoming a national problem, the Bush administration looked the other way and did nothing to protect American homeowners. In fact, the government chose instead to align itself with the banks that were victimizing consumers. Predatory lending was widely understood to present a looming national crisis. This threat was so clear that as New York Attorney General, I joined with colleagues in the other 49 states in attempting to fill the void left by the federal government. Individually and together, state attorneys general of both parties brought litigation or entered into settlements with many subprime lenders that were engaged in predatory lending practices. Several state legislatures, including New York's, enacted laws aimed at curbing such practices. What did the Bush administration do in response? Did it reverse its course and decide to take action to halt this burgeoning scourge? As Americans are now painfully aware, with hundreds of thousands of homeowners facing foreclosure and our markets reeling, the answer is a resounding no. Not only did the Bush administration do nothing to protect consumers, it embarked on an aggressive and unprecedented campaign to prevent states from protecting their own residents from the very problems to which the federal government was turning a blind eye. Let me explain. The administration accomplished this feat through an obscure federal agency called the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC. The OCC has been in existence since the Civil War. Its mission is to ensure the fiscal soundness of national banks. For 140 years, the OCC examined the books of national banks to make sure they were balanced, an important but uncontroversial function. But a few years ago, for the first time in its history, the OCC was used as a tool against consumers. In 2003, during the height of the predatory lending crisis, the OCC invoked a clause from the 1863 National Bank Act to issue formal opinions preempting all state predatory lending laws, thereby rendering them inoperative. The OCC also promulgated new rules, that prevented states from enforcing any of their own consumer protection laws against national banks. The federal government's actions were so egregious and so unprecedented that all 50 state attorneys general and all 50 state banking superintendents actively fought the new rules. Let me digress. What Spitzer's saying here, that back in 2003, when this thing really took off, this predatory lending, this horror that's now bringing the chickens home to roost, the Bush crime family used the OCC to invoke a clause that stopped states from enacting their own laws to examine the books of banks. Back to Spitzer's op-ed piece. But the unanimous opposition of the 50 states did not deter or even slow the Bush administration in its goal of protecting the banks. In fact, when my office opened an investigation of possible discrimination in mortgage lending by a number of banks, the OCC filed a federal lawsuit to stop the investigation. Throughout our battles with the OCC and the banks, the mantra of the banks and their defenders was that efforts to curb predatory lending would deny access to credit to the very consumers the states were trying to protect. But the curbs we sought on predatory and unfair lending would have in no way jeopardized access to the legitimate credit market for appropriately priced loans. Instead, they would have stopped the scourge of predatory lending practices that have resulted in countless thousands of consumers now losing their homes and our economy being put in a precarious position. When history tells the story of the subprime lending crisis and recounts its devastating effects on the lives of so many innocent homeowners, the Bush administration will not be judged favorably. The tale is still unfolding, but when the dust settles, it will be judged, the Bush administration will be judged as a willing accomplice to the lenders who went to any lengths in their quest for profits. So willing, in fact, that it used the power of the federal government in an unprecedented assault on state legislatures, as well on state attorneys general and anyone else on the side of consumers. Now, that was in the Washington Post, February 14th. When did the news break about Elliot Spitzer consorting with a prostitute? Huh? Now, there was a time when it was common knowledge in this country that America's best-known cross-dresser at the time, J. Edgar Hoover, you think Giuliani was bad. Hoover used to dress up and go out with his male roommate. Not that there's anything wrong with that. J. Edgar Hoover had a dossier on just about everybody. That's why J. Edgar Hoover was the head of the FBI for what, Kathy, 35, 40 years, however long it was. Nobody could remove him. No precedent or president, no legislature, no Senate, no House member, no, nobody could, because he had the goods on everybody. Which means what? If everybody's guilty, nobody is, right? Now, I'm not trying to make an excuse for Elliot Spitzer. Elliot Spitzer, like so many powerful men, engineered his own downfall. But isn't it interesting, the timing, the timing? It's always this way, isn't it? Of course it is. You get in the way of predatory capitalism, and your ass will be absolutely and utterly destroyed. Which makes me wonder what Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, if either of them is elected president, is really going to do.
And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around
with. I believe in urban homesteading. That says we're going to identify federal property and provide lots for low-income citizens that they'll have for free, so long as they build a house on there with a mortgage.
Yeah, whatever happened to that idea? Greg Pallas and Alexander Coburn both. Coburn writing at, his website. And Dave Lindorf also has written about, what am I trying to say? Damn, come on, Mike. Greg Pallas, Alexander Coburn, and Dave Lindorf. Boy, you talk about a threesome. They've all kind of drawn the same conclusion that, sure, Elliot Spitzer was a dumbass for doing what he did, and no, there's no such thing as victimless crime where it concerns prostitution, and yada, 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 but the timing of why and how he was brought down, information that was there just waiting to be handed off to the feds, so the federal attorneys, who are Republican, who worked for George W. Bush's corrupt Justice Department, the information has been there. Now, it always makes me wonder, and I don't quite get this. I really don't. What produces the kind of hubris in these men? This idea, I'm untouchable, I can do anything I want to do, nobody's going to find out. I don't care if they're fundamentalist preachers or politicians, or in the case of Bill Clinton, president of the U.S., Where does that attitude come from? That, you know, I'm immune. I'm not going to be found out. Especially in politics. And especially people who persist in demonizing folks who happen to be gay. Don't these people understand, the gay demonizers and the politicians, that they have natural-born enemies? In politics, anybody who wants to see them fall, whether they're of a different political party or are apolitical and just want to bring fascism to the U.S. as quickly as possible, and where concerns the gay bashers, there are enough people in this country who happen to be gay who are very much aware of the people who are trying to have them murdered, trying to lay the groundwork to make gay murder legal. So what's up? What is it that gets between the ears of these men and turns into dung where they honestly believe that they're immune. Oh, I can go have sex with a gay hustler. Nobody will know. Oh, I can go have sex with a heterosexual prostitute. No one will know. What is that? These are otherwise, are they not, relatively intelligent people, men? What? And I agree with a lot of people who have blogged about this. The wives of these men who show up at, and stand at the podium while the cameras are clicking and the videotape or the whatever is running and the questions are coming and they stand there. These women who have done nothing, and I don't want to hear any stuff about, well, she drove him to it. No, they've done nothing in regard to the male's infidelity that brings him down. Now, you can also make an argument that this is bat crap, that to bring down anybody, whether it's a homophobic preacher or a Democratic politician or a Republican member of the House or the Senate, to bring them down because of their sexual activities with consenting adults is insane. It's just absolutely insane. And that's not a bad argument. But I often wonder what's between the ears of these crazy bastards, and especially someone like Spitzer. Dear God! I mean, he prosecuted... Oh, never mind. The only reason I brought it up was because of the connection or the serendipity, wrong word used in this context, but what the hell, the serendipity of his having written a February 14th editorial in the op-ed piece in the Washington Post, and what, a week later or whatever it was it a week, was it 10 days, boom, down he comes. Incredible. Back to your phone calls. Martin is calling from Pittsburgh, PA. Martin, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, Mr. Malloy.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Fine.
Well, the reason I called is in regards to the financial meltdowns that we're seeing at the moment. I think one of the major criminals in the whole picture is not being properly identified. Rather, we're going to them, kind of like the sheep going to the wolves, mm-hmm. to beg their advice and protection. I'm referring to the Federal Reserve and, you know, the chairman, whoever they may be, of that board. You know, what people have completely forgotten.
Hey, can you hold on just a second,
sure.
Martin? I've got to do a break here, and I want to get I want folks to hear your point of view here. So just hold on, Martin. We'll come back to you right after the break. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us, please.
More of Mike Malloy.
What would you do if I sang out of tune?
25 before the hour, back to Martin, who has called in from Pittsburgh. All right, where were we, Martin?
Well, Mike, okay. So, fiscal policy, public policy, is pretty much being directed by the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Neither political party's leadership is saying, wait a minute, what's going on? We the people are like ignorant sheep being led to the slaughter by these wolves. It seems like nobody knows. It's not being made clear anymore. The Federal Reserve is anything but a federal agency working on behalf of the people. It's the private banks.
Right.
And they work for one thing only, which is their profit. And every damn thing that's going on in the economy that's exploding is going on under their watch, under their guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so ridiculous. I mean, I'm disgusted by, I don't care whether it's a Clinton, an Obama, a Bush. I think they're all absolutely disgusting. None of them really come forward strongly and oppose the absolute, you know, scoundrels who are raping all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think of the Federal Reserve, a very brief recap is that one of the principal reasons this country was formed, broke away from England, even before the whole no taxation without representation thing. If you read Jefferson and Franklin and the early great heroes of this country, you'll say they were all saying, we will not have this country be like a slave state of England where they lend us the money
mm-hmm.
by which our economy functions at interest. Therefore, in the Constitution, it's right there that the people give Congress, the power to print money on our behalf, the people's behalf, not at interest. And in the 1920s, the government, you know, just like Bush, same kind of people, bypassed that, went to Jekyll Island, said, here you are, Federal Reserve, you know, private banks will give you this new name, Federal Reserve, that'll fool the idiots out there. You're now the Federal Reserve, you've got no reserves, you're not federal, you're private. You print the money, we'll give you that power, lend us that money, the government, and we'll pay you interest. So that now, this country, never mind what Bush is doing in Iraq, which is horrific, there isn't enough money in circulation. There never will be, just to pay off the bloody interest on mm-hmm. the debt that we owe. It is such a scam. And all these politicians, all these leading politicians, are completely in cahoots with the real buggers who are devastating all of us. So whatever I hear in the papers, the interest is going up, the interest is going down, this institution, that, blah, it's all complete smoke and mirrors. They know exactly what they're doing. And the only thing left for this country positively is, you know, America, instead of going to football games and singing about land of the free, home of the brave, and then drinking half a dozen packs of, you know, beer and watching bloody television, is if this country stands a chance, there's only one answer left. It's to do what the founding fathers did. It's enough. We reject your authority. We're not playing ball. It means like a massive veto of paying taxes, a massive resistance to the authority that the government's assuming upon itself. I don't know how that can happen. If it doesn't happen, well, we're all going to hell in a handbasket. It's that simple.
Well, Martin, that's an excellent point. And sadly, I and most Americans are not aware of that part, of the Constitution that you focused on, the right of the obligation of the Congress where it concerns monetary policy. You know, as you were talking, I just vaguely remember my American history and government teacher in high school touching on that very issue. But it's gone now. 99 Americans out of 100, and I put myself in with the 99, would not have a clue as to the formation of the Federal Reserve, what it's all about, and who controls it. Good points, Martin. Thank you very much for bringing them up. When I have someone email me or call in with that kind of insight or that kind of factual statement, you know, I start to feel like an idiot. Like, were you asleep during that part? Yeah, I guess I was. And just never paid that much of attention. I've always had See, this is what makes me an American. I've always had faith in my government. Well, not always. Come on. Don't reach for your phone or your email. You know, say, what? For the better part of my formative years, like most people who were brought up in the time I was, the government was my friend. I was too young to pay any attention to the Army McCarthy hearings. Like I said before, it wasn't until the early 60s that I started. And even then, I figured all the murder that was going on was not caused by aspects or entities of the U.S. government, by outside forces. And I didn't have a working knowledge of U.S. Foreign policy from the 1890s on. I always thought that, you know, I really did live in a place. I was lucky enough by birth and by skin color. Or race to have been born someplace where, and gender, where I had all these privileges. I was a white American male. Nothing could go wrong. And my country was run almost exclusively by other white American males. What could go wrong? Everything was fine. Everything was okay. And no matter where the onslaught came from, against me or my family or my school or my neighborhood or the Constitution, it had to have been coming from some force other than my government, my country. It had to have been an external force. Well, you know the end of the story. Obviously, I started to come out of the ether, and I just made it a point over the years that I have had children to raise, to the extent that I could influence their thinking, is to never, ever, ever, ever let them believe the misinformation that I believed. I was probably in my 30s before I even had a clue. I'm sad to admit this. Before I even had a clue of the extent of the German-American Bund during the 30s and 40s in this country, this powerful influence of white male Americans to align themselves with the Nazis, to exterminate the socialists, the communists, the Jews, anyone else who got in their way for the sake of capital, strictly for the sake of the capitalistic system, unfettered, unbridled, predatory capitalism. It's just embarrassing. So thank you, Martin. And also, I just got an email from a friend who said, I just found out that the deal to buy Bear Stearns includes federal funds of $6 billion to defend against shareholder lawsuits. Why, of course. Why, absolutely, of course. Of course. Back to your phone calls. Terry is calling from St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Mike. Good show. I'm glad I'm back on the air here.
Me too.
Yeah. I was going to say that I agree with Reverend Ray. I mm-hmm. don't know his name, but I agree with everything he said. You know, I got a friend of mine, his old man is a Democrat, and he's got a sign in his yard that says, God bless the world. Think about it. You talk about there's so many things to talk about. You can't cover it. This is just one thing. But people shouldn't be afraid to talk. You know, to speak out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I know the only reason that Barack Obama's kind of getting away from him is we got a presidential primary going on. So, but. Like I said before, Democrats, we got to stick together, and you know, you can't say, I'm not going to vote because I don't like him or I don't like her. You just got to do it. Vote Democratic and get the Republicans out. They're not doing anything. I mean, there's probably, a couple there that, Sanders, Senator Sanders, mm-hmm. Sanders, he's independent, but... I tell you.
Well, you know, I tell myself that over and over and over again because I have to tell you, Terry, you know, I have a real struggle with the type of politician now who identifies himself or herself as a Democrat. They're not the kind of Democrat that, for the most part, that I want to associate with. and to actually vote for or support them politically is kind of difficult. But I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. It's just that, you know, I've got that struggle every day. Terry, thanks, man. I got a boogie. Appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. Ten before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch is the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. And Bridget Wolf is our writer in residence. Catherine Beggs, the executive producer of this program. Oh, and if I haven't mentioned it lately, become a Nova M founding member, would you please? You get free downloads and podcasts when you want them. And you also get access to special videos and additional features, including the video from the event last month that Scott Ritter and I and KPHX and Nova M Radio co-produced in Phoenix. NovaMRadio.com. Marianne is calling from Key West, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Marianne.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Here I sit in Florida one more time. Our votes don't count.
Mm.
No hanging chads this time.
Yeah, right.
Republicans took our votes away again.
What are you going to do? What do you want to have happen regarding the Democratic primary in Florida? How do you want this to be resolved, Marianne?
Well, we would like for our votes to count. I mean, they counted for... our taxes that counted for everything else on our ballots,
but
they won't count our vote.
But it's my understanding that the only candidate, as a matter of fact, the only candidate who did any campaigning in Florida was Hillary Clinton. Is that true?
She didn't campaign. No.
She didn't either. Nobody did.
No, nobody did.
Okay.
But yet there was the largest turnout in Democratic history.
Who won that campaign? Or that primary?
Hillary did.
Hillary did?
Yep.
I know in Michigan, her name was the only name on the ballot, so that would be...
But Barack took his name off on his own, you know, he did it himself.
Well, but the Democratic National Convention, or National Committee...
But they're going to revote.
Yeah, they're going to revote, right. But the state of Michigan is not controlled by Republicans.
Right.
And the state of Florida is.
And the people here... Nobody asked us.
Right.
You know, we don't have any say in this. It's the people that we would revote if they'd let us.
So without a revote, how are the Democrats in Florida going to express their will, their opinion regarding...
Right. So we're screwed one more time.
So you're not going to...
We're disenfranchised one more time. We lost our president because of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have any choice.
Do you feel that there comes a time if your representation, you know, we had a revolution in this country over taxation without representation.
That's right. That's exactly the way I feel. I don't have a constitution anymore. I don't have a country anymore.
Are you a member of the Conk Republic?
Yes, I am.
Are you?
I'm a conk all the way through.
I'd like to be, too.
I'm a freshwater conk.
I'd like to be, too, but I don't have the money to live there.
Oh, yeah, you can make it. Once you get sand in your toes, you just can't leave.
I've spent enough time at in Key West over the years that I would love to be there, but I just can't afford to be there anymore. I can't
sure
afford to live
can.
There.
You make a way.
Is Captain Tony still there?
Yeah, sure.
It is? I remember when he ran for... He
became the mayor.
He became the mayor, but then he was also going to run as the head of the Conk Republic, I think.
Yeah.
And somebody talked him
out
of it.
We did leave the United States for a while.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, all the Key West talk aside, I wonder, Marianne, what the voters, what the Democratic voters in Florida are going to do.
Well, we would like to know what to do. You know, what can you do?
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to go march somewhere, but, you know, I'm getting too old to march.
Yeah, I hear that. It's my understanding that the Obama and Clinton campaigns are trying to work out some sort of a compromise. Do you have any idea what would be a good compromise?
I don't know what would be a good compromise. A revote would be the best thing that could happen. They said no.
What about just taking the number of delegates that Democratic Party delegates that Florida has and splitting them?
Well, I don't think that's fair.
You don't?
Well, do you think that's fair? I don't think that's fair.
Well,
needs to be a winner.
Well, it's not fair in the great scheme of things, but if it's the only thing left, if the only other choice is no representation.
Well, it would be the same thing. It's either.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it would be split zero or it'd be split 50-50. It really needs to be a winner, either one way or the other.
Well, it's one of those.
What good's it going to do them?
One of those situations where it doesn't look like there is an answer. Damn.
No, you know, and it's not right.
I hear you. I hear you, Marianne. Well, thanks for checking in, okay?
Yeah, you know, and if any other callers can figure out a way, you know. What I'd like to do is I'd like to march on Washington. If anybody wants to join me, let me hear from you.
I hear you, but I have one more question that might be a little bit more important than any of this. Is Hemingway still open?
Sure.
Oh, good.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Marianne.
Come on down and visit us.
I hear you. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Call again, okay? Take care. I get homesick for Key West, but I could no more afford to go back there than...
You'll take me there someday, right?
Yeah, you've never been, have you?
I've never been to Key West. I don't think I've been south of Sarasota.
Really?
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think that's about it. But I was going to say, I couldn't agree with Marianne more. If I lived in Florida or Michigan, I would be furious. Mm-hmm. I really would. I don't know who made those decisions, but they were wrong.
I hear you. Well, it was Howard Dean and the Democratic National Committee that made the
decision. Well, he was wrong. Yow! I'll say it. I'll scream it, Dean. You were wrong!
Okay, on that note, we'll say goodnight. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.